Hey, it's Chaz and AJ in the morning.
Hey, what's going on?
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Here are some of the best parts from today's show.
Listen to it, please. Thank you.
And please subscribe, share, like, comment, all that stuff.
All of it, please.
Thank you. And Dr. Thaw is here.
Yay!
Good morning, Dr. Thaw.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. It all started with AJ just not getting any sleep.
Right.
So he's not the only one. Congratulations. There are millions of people just like you.
All right. See? Morning club.
And part of the problem is that a lot of them are not being addressed appropriately, and they just go on for day or night after night after night, waking up feeling just as tired as they went to sleep, and then basically sleepwalking through their entire life.
Yep.
That's,
are you guys really here right now? Is it sleepwalking? I'm having a dream right now.
Yeah. If you have a spouse that snores like crazy,
yeah,
call in. Or if you have some kind of a sleep disorder problem, insomnia, apnea, whatever.
Yeah.
203-882-9757.
I will tell you that, as I was mentioning before off air, but one of the common causes of sudden death if from people who snore is waking up with scissors in your chest from the person next to you.
that is sudden death, yeah.
Right, or smothering you with a pillow, one or the other.
Right.
It's got to happen. Because I got to tell you, when you hear someone snoring and you're trying to sleep, and they're keeping you up,
it's endless.
It becomes torture.
And you're not in your right mind because you're sleep deprived.
Right. And now you're in this different state.
Now you must die.
Right.
Now you must die.
So, obviously we close our eyes at night, but our ears are always open.
Yep.
So the bed partner of somebody who snores loses at least an hour of sleep per night, which means that, imagine every night somebody moves the clock ahead an hour. We just experienced that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Imagine if that happens every night. Night after night after night.
Yeah.
I heard a plastic bag over their head works.
Or a pillow over their face.
Right.
Yeah. Now, AJ, what's your problem? You just don't sleep.
I just don't sleep. I can't shut my mind off.
So that's a very common complaint. People think they can't shut their mind off because they have the thoughts racing.
Yep.
But that's a sign actually of adrenaline running in their body.
Okay.
Imagine what do you suggest for someone like that?
So weed. One thing that's important. I'm sorry?
Weed.
So people try that and people self-medicate with alcohol or other drugs, for instance, and that becomes a slippery slope. And
what do you think of Ambien?
I'll tell you, Ambien, the problem with Ambien is that it works well in the beginning, and then you're stuck, because then you keep going to that well.
Are you dependent?
Yeah, you can't have a night without it.
Yeah,
you become dependent. And then, after years of taking Ambien, decades of taking Ambien, it has an effect on your long-term and short-term memory.
Oh,
so, really?
Yeah, it's not.
So what do you suggest for someone who, like AJ, just lays down and just can't go to sleep?
So part of our society is like we're wired all the time. Uh-huh. We're on a computer, we're on a phone, we're watching cable television, Netflix, the whole nine yards all the time, constant information overload. We are not good at shutting down. Sometimes we just need to create a safe zone. And our bedroom is supposed to be that oasis.
Yeah, what do you do right before you go to bed? You're in your phone.
Yeah, usually.
Just TikTok, whatever, emails,
right.
What's over here,
through,
what's
like
over
Facebook,
here?
Whatnot, yeah.
Yeah, so that is that. And keep in mind, these screens are bright enough. It's like having a little sun in your hand.
Yeah.
So you're sending your brain all the wrong messages before you go to sleep.
Like, hey, we're up.
Wake up. It's morning.
Yeah. Have some coffee. Yeah.
And the other thing that happens is after you've had a few bad nights, it's like you're in a different time zone. You become like you got transferred to South Korea. So that you're awake at all the wrong times and tired at all the wrong times. He might be more tired at 1 p.m. than he is at 1 a.m.
Oh, yeah. I come crashing down hard around 1 o'clock, between 1 o'clock and 3 o'clock.
How did I know?
Yeah. Tom on the road.
How you doing? Good morning.
Hey. Good morning.
I've been listening for quite a while. I just never call. I know my number looks like a solicitor's, but I had a question about snoring. I had about 4 years ago, 3, 4, 5 ACDF on my cervical spine, and I have trouble swallowing. And I think one of the other results was I got a problem snoring. And I'm wondering, I don't like to take drugs or anything like that, but I'm wondering if you have an answer or some kind of therapy. Is there a therapy out there for that?
Oh, yes. Oh, my God, yes. So, first of all, the point we have to, or that has to be made, is that we have to try to get away from medication in order to get asleep. The brain has to work properly in order to sleep. And
no, forget that then.
Right. So so the answer is not with medication.
Look around you.
Right. And exactly. So if you're an engineer, you want to be functioning on, you know, on all cylinders all the time. So the answer, what happened probably, is that somehow the nerve, just like you can't swallow properly, that means the muscles in your oropharynx are not functioning properly in the back of your throat where you swallow.
Uh-huh.
And that could lead to more collapse. Yeah. And that's probably happening even more so while you sleep. Now, just like we use air to inflate a tire, we can use air to keep your throat open so you can sleep and breathe at the same time.
What, you put a hose in his throat?
No, yes. No. We actually wear... I mean, actually...
You know my idea.
Yeah.
I was just kidding.
Right.
Well, actually, you know, back in the day when, you know, when the dinosaurs roamed the earth, they sometimes the only treatment was available was to put a tracheostomy, to put a tube in the throat.
Oh.
Yeah, not suboptimal. Yeah. It's not...
Oh, God, we're not in those times now.
Not a patient satisfier. So what we need to do is we usually give patients a mask, either a mask that goes over or under their nose or over their nose and mouth or under their nose and over their mouth. They're all different kinds of combinations. Something that's very comfortable, something that will work, that they can fall asleep with.
That'll work with Tom.
Yeah.
But AJ has a different problem, right?
Right.
So
right.
Sleep apnea is air.
Right.
Flow.
Right. For airflow, right.
Okay.
And turbulence. The snoring is caused by turbulence.
Thank you, Tom.
As a, you know, as the structure collapses, it makes that sound, that
snoring sound?
That snoring sound.
Okay.
Right. That's because the air can't get through. Only a little bit does.
You must have heard some really crazy snorers, like recordings.
Yeah. Oh, everybody.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah, everybody thinks they're the first people to record themselves, but it's like animals, bears, you know.
What's scary is when you hear someone snoring. And there's a long, all of a sudden, it just stops. And there's a long gap. What's happening?
They are not breathing at all.
Oh. That's why it's
right.
scary.
So, right. That's why. So
now,
that
do you
means
do anything or you let it go?
You don't make plunger. Any. You don't make any noise when you're not breathing. And dead people don't snore either.
No, but the other, true, like right. if you're in the room with someone who
just, and you hear
long stop, do you do something?
So a lot of times people do nudge the person to get them to breathe because they think they're not going to wake up.
Yeah.
Usually the most common response is, what are you doing that for? Like, what? I was sleeping. Why'd you wake me?
Yeah,
right.
But it that is a bad sign. If you see that happening, that is the most likely cause for snoring and sleep apnea. If you
but
see
do
that,
people
most
die
common,
from that.
Well,
do people
over
like,
time,
not wake up?
They don't reconnect.
Over
there
time,
there are people that do. We don't. We'll never know the real prevalence of that because they die in their sleep.
But
it does happen.
Okay,
sometimes
people
can wake up with chest pain,
so
they can wake up with palpitations.
People, when they die in their sleep, we don't know that it was sleep apnea?
We can't tell.
We just say they died.
Yeah. In their sleep. But it's very...
That's it.
It's probably a good
that's
reason.
That's what it says on the death certificate?
Well,
died in
their
sleep.
Never woke up.
Yeah, cardiac arrest or...
Oh, no kidding.
Right.
Natural causes, whatever it might be.
Natural.
But it's not natural. So the whole point is that is something you don't want to have happen. You don't want to be one of those people who wakes up dead. That's would ruin your day.
It really would.
And then
angels come from, yep.
And then sure enough, but the other thing is that over time it leads to a whole bunch of medical conditions that most people don't want to deal with, whether it's high blood pressure, heart rhythm disturbances, like irregular heartbeats, fast heartbeats, slow heartbeats, heart disease, diabetes, dementia, strokes.
Really?
Strokes.
All that happens?
Yeah. All
really?
That happens
wow.
after untreated
I feel
sleep
like
apnea.
Wow. Drumming up some business for yourself.
Seriously,
here.
Really?
I don't have to.
Really?
I don't have to drum up any business. They're knocking down the doors in order to get to us.
No kidding.
And in fact,
those things could be caused by just not breathing right
wow.
while you're sleeping.
Well, you have to realize that the body is trying to be in a complete sleep state, which means that they are completely relaxed and basically numbed or anesthetized to the rest of the world. And if this snoring event, if they're not getting enough air, it's almost like a shock to the system where it has to decide, do you want to sleep or do you want to breathe? Because you're not doing both. Hmm. So it wakes you up. But that startle phenomenon makes people have that flight of ideas. They wake up and think, oh, my God, I got to do, got to call the plumber. I got to do my taxes. Got to do this. Got to do that.
I cut the lawn.
And, yeah. and then you got, and you keep on running with that. And
Dr. Thaw is on. We're going to grab a call here.
Sure.
Stephen Milford.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey.
I'm trying to keep as quiet as possible. You pushed the button early. I diagnosed with sleep apnea, and I got to tell you, it is night and day. I got the machine, but before I had the machine, I was literally falling asleep on my way to work. And I was also, yeah, I would be driving down Racebrook 34 and I'd be dozing off a little bit.
Yep.
But the biggest thing was my partner couldn't sleep. She kept pushing me, and I thought she was just abusing me in my sleep, but it was just like tapping me to get me to stop snoring. But the biggest thing was is that I would just lay down and watch TV and fall asleep randomly. But now it's like I have so much energy. I'm up until 11 o'clock now, and everything is great. And another thing was the headache. So I would, in the middle of the night, I would feel like I would wake up with this horrible, horrible headache. And then in the morning, it would continue to stay with me. And that got me to go get the study done. But, yeah, great topic. It is a life changer when you get the machine, and it is not fun, having it.
Is the machine loud? Does that keep your partner up?
No. The machines have gotten quieter. It's just about as quiet as, your computer running in background.
Yeah.
It's like a mild hum. Most of the time, it's infinitely better than a patient
snoring. Most insurance cover it?
Not only do they cover it, they should pay you to do it.
Wow.
So what I would say is to Steve, I mean, congratulations, kudos to you.
Yeah, thank you, Steve.
I'm glad you're feeling much better. By the way, he has a point that one of the other causes of disease or comorbidities, either injury or death, is people falling asleep behind the wheel.
Jeez.
And it happens. That's why the...
Out of nowhere.
That's why they wake... That's why people are just drive off the road on the merit all the time.
You had that happen.
Yeah.
You're a mess, by the way.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
It's every day we're talking about some problem you have.
I straightened that Route 8.
there are billions of dollars worth of property damage caused by these accidents.
Really?
Really. There are hundreds of thousands of injuries, ER visits, thousands of deaths every year. That's why the week after we move the clocks ahead is the Sleep Awareness Week, because people want to highlight the fact that we are such a sleep-deprived society that if we can't handle losing another hour, we're already functioning at 5.5-6 hours on a good day, and then we lose an hour, and we're running on empty.
All right, let's go right over to Chris in Oxford. Hey, Chris.
Hi, good morning. How are you guys?
Hello. Good, thanks. You have a sleep problem?
Oh, my gosh. I've been listening to you guys, and I was diagnosed last year. After about 6 years ago, my doctor told me, you need to go get checked because, you have all these issues. So I go get checked. I have sleep apnea. Was told I was holding my breath 15 times an hour.
Wow.
After I did the test. Yeah. And in the meantime, so last year was the year I decided to take care of myself. I went to a cardiologist because I kept having these awful heart palpitations to the point where they would take my breath away. I'd be relaxing, watching TV at night, just stand up off the couch, look at my husband like, what? He's like, are you all right? I'm like, no, I can't breathe. So went to the cardiologist. They did all kinds of tests. That all came back fine. I did the sleep apnea, got the machine, started November 2nd, and what a difference. I get up now in the morning. I have all this energy. I was falling asleep at my desk at work. It was horrible. So then I have
boring
a follow-up cardiologist.
What do you do?
Yeah.
I'm a legal assistant.
Oh, see.
Okay. So not a place you want to fall asleep.
Yeah, it's actually that can get people fired. People get blamed for being lazy or not attentive. It's not their fault.
Yeah.
staying awake at your desk when you have sleep apnea, it's like trying to function while you're drunk.
Yeah.
It's called sleep drunkenness for a reason. So when you just pass out like that, it's not because you don't have, you know, you don't have the drive or you're not interested in the job. It's that you are physically overcome with exhaustion. Just like your cell phone powers down, that's what's happening to your body. And once that happens, there's nothing you can do about it, which is why. And by the way, I'm glad you were diagnosed. This is an issue because a lot of people don't even want to ask women if they snore. Right, that seems like a personal, intrusive kind of question.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that 15 times an hour would be considered mild. I see patients that stop breathing 40, 60, 80, even as many as 120 to 140 times an hour.
Wow.
It's nuts.
And they said, I guess, 5 and under is, you know, the norm for people.
Right.
But they also told me when I got the machine that, and this kind of shocked me, and I don't know that, you know, this is true, but they said it's the number, so stroke, I guess, due to sleep apnea, is the number one killer in the world. I don't know if that's true, but I don't want to have a stroke. I mean, my maternal grandmother had a stroke. My dad had a stroke. So, but just getting the machine, you cannot hear it. I only have the nose pillows because I'm not a mouth.
What's a nose pillow?
Oh, nose pillows. That means that the instead of having a mask,
it just goes over the nose.
It goes actually into the nostrils a little bit.
Can't do it.
So you might be surprised, but there are other ways. There are other ways around. The important thing is to find something that works for the individual. Yeah. This is something that has to be tailored.
The rolling over has to be a problem.
Tangled.
Well, no. Actually, once you stop the snoring, you sleep still.
Really?
Yeah. No more.
Like I'm a side sleeper, so like my arm would like there be no blood going through.
Right.
So here's the thing: they give you a long hose, and it's pretty flexible.
Right.
I thought that was going to be a problem also, but I'm also a side sleeper, so I sleep on my right side. I grab the hose, I kind of tuck it under my arm, and you know, yes, a couple times I pulled the machine off the table, but my husband made a table for it, and I wrapped the hose through my nightstand leg.
So you figured it out.
Pull, yeah. Right. Well, actually, a lot of the masks come
Thank you, Chris.
A lot of the masks come with a swivel, so actually you can turn it around and put it above, behind the headboard, so no matter, even if you spin around
like a deep sea diver.
Right. Even though you could spin around like a top and you won't get tangled up in it. They figured They figured it out. There's been so many advances.
We've come a long way since we were drilling holes in people's throats.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Are a lot of these breathing issues, are they all physical problems or are they psychological too? Like
No. So when you're not breathing, that's a physical issue. But what happens is the physical stuff causes a lot of psychological and emotional issues.
Explains a lot for me.
So a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression. You were talking about PTSD with the veterans before.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of them have trouble sleeping. They have a lot of nightmares. They're afraid to go to sleep. They don't want to have the nightmares. You know, this is all about sleep and allowing the brain to reset, reprogram, or like your computer defragments, you know, when you shut it down.
Yeah, reboot.
And reboot, right? That's what IT tells you to do all the time. This is your brain's ability to reboot.
You got to unplug yourself for 30 seconds?
Interesting.
Well, not for 30 seconds, for 8 hours.
Oh.
Right? So,
we got about a minute. But,
sure.
Like, do we, is it two major sleep problems? Like, one is sleep apnea, and the other is you just can't fall asleep.
Right.
Insomnia.
So those are by far
are
the most common. But there are other sleep issues out there that people have, and sometimes they don't get enough attention and they just sleepwalk through life and they feel like, well, I don't have trouble falling asleep and I don't snore, therefore I don't have a sleep disorder. Not true.
There's a big case where there was a murder committed.
Correct.
And the person said they were
sleepwalking. Right.
Would you testify in that in defense of who?
Well, I would testify in defense of the patient if they have it.
It's a thing.
It's
so
a
you
thing.
Can actually
you can actually do that
and murder someone.
Yeah,
really?
Well, because again, what's happening is the brain is asleep, the body is awake. So these are things that we can see, in which you're in a dream state, but your body's still moving. It's a disconnect. Instead of the lights being on or off, there's a flickering. So you have parts of your body are awake when they should be asleep. again,
like looking at a building and not all the lights are on, but yeah, some of the lights are on.
Right.
Right.
Or in this case, your brain's asleep, your body's awake.
Wow.
But it's true that people can have their body asleep and their brain awake. So how about waking up in the middle of the night or early in the morning and you can't move a muscle? That's called sleep paralysis.
Oh,
scary.
Scary.
And it feels like when it happens, even if it lasts for about 15 seconds, maybe even less, it feels like an hour because you're so terrified.
The phones are going nuts. Yeah. Clearly.
We struck a nerve. No pun intended.
We struck a nerve.
Obviously, yep.
Got to have you back,
yep.
Dr. Stephen Thaw. And that's spelled T-H-A-U.
Correct.
Sleep specialist, pulmonary medicine, St. Vincent's Medical Center, Hartford Healthcare Medical Group. We're linked up on the radio station website. Thank you. Well done. DOT Commissioner Garrett Eucalito on the show now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, when you saw that story, what did you think?
I immediately thought about what was going through the mind of the Maryland DOT folks. That's the worst possible scenario. I think everyone who works in a Department of Transportation has in their mind is losing one of your bridges. Connecticut has had experience with that in the Mianus River Bridge collapse back in the 80s, but nothing to this magnitude.
Right. How many bridges do we have in Connecticut?
I don't know. That's a trivia question I don't have an answer for.
Yeah.
That's a trivia question.
More than 10.
We have a lot of bridges.
No one really knows, right? Because
right.
You'd have to go around counting all the little ones in town and over little creeks.
Yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds of bridges across the state.
Yeah, we have a lot.
We do.
4,362.
Thank there you, Rain Man.
I didn't just know that. I just looked it up.
Did a box of toothpicks just fall on the ground?
He counted them, yeah.
Thank you, Justin. The biggest one is that Gold Star Bridge, right?
Yes, that's our longest bridge. It's about 1.1 miles long. It's probably, I think it's around over about 150 feet high off the water.
Mm. I'm never comfortable going over that bridge. I know it's fine. I know it's built by great people, smart people. It's an engineering miracle.
Right.
I just never feel, I don't like heights.
Yeah. That's why I speed over it.
Yeah.
If you look at the cameras, that's my car.
So what a nightmare that is now for any DOT commissioner, right? A major bridge out. How do people get around now? What do you think that their DOT commissioner is doing today?
What happened as soon as that happened is they start coming up with diversion plans. The good thing is they have two alternative routes for cars to get through that harbor. They have two tunnels under the water, so cars could take the tunnels to get through the Baltimore Harbor. Unfortunately, large tractor-trailer trucks that are carrying any hazardous material are prohibited from tunnels. So, trying to figure out where to divert those trucks that need to get up and down the East Coast is a key concern. But you also have the port operation. That's the ninth largest and busiest port in the United States. A huge volume of our cargo for the U.S., especially the Northeast, goes through there. So where are they going to divert those ships to ensure that commerce doesn't stop?
Now, we heard some of those ships might come into the New Haven Harbor. Is that true? Do you know? And if so, does that fall under your umbrella as DOT commissioner?
Several years ago, they created the Connecticut Port Authority, and they took ports and harbors away from Connecticut DOT. Those ships that currently are going into Baltimore Harbor are stuck in Baltimore Harbor, they can't fit in New London Port. Those are 100,000-ton massive cargo ships. What could happen, though, is they then will have to go to other ports that can handle ships of their size, and then they'll push off some of the smaller boats. It'll be like a domino effect where smaller and smaller ships will keep getting pushed out of bigger ports, and then New London may be able, and or New Haven could absorb some of those smaller ships that can fit.
Right, smaller traffic. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. And then we could expect more traffic on the highways in New Haven with people trucking more.
Absolutely.
Got it. The reason why we have you on is to talk about this exciting good news that you have for anyone who gets into that 691-1561-691 nightmare from hell every day.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why we never came up with like a fun name for it. Like, you know, in Waterbury, it's the Mixmaster. This, we have to say 91.6, 91.15. We never came up with a good nickname for it.
Oh, what is 691 plus 91 plus 15 together add up to? We'll just call it that number.
Right.
And we'll call it From Hell.
Where's Rain Man guy when you need him?
Yeah, Rain Man guy.
799.
799?
799.
Wow.
There we go.
The 799 from hell.
I like that.
Yes. I drive it every single day. You know, it's one of those things where it was like a Frankenstein monster. They built one road, and then later on we built another road, and then later on we built another road and just like shoved them together. And so now we're finally started the process of coming back and doing some cosmetic surgery to make it look better and make it work better.
Which one of those was first? Was 15 first?
Yeah, 15 was first, and then 91, then 691.
Yeah, okay. 15 had like horse and buggies and stuff on it.
Yeah, that was the commuter highway for New Yorkers to get through Connecticut.
Yeah,
91's a great idea. It's like, how are we going to get from New Haven to Hartford?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Boom.
Okay, perfect.
Right.
All right. Now, 691, well, how do we get from 91 to 84 if we don't want to go to Hartford?
We'll put a 6 in front of it.
All right, we'll just put a... Yeah, what do we call this? That's called 691.
I love it! All right, before lunch, great.
Yeah, that is a mess. So what are you going to do, and how long is it going to take?
It's going to take probably about 5 years total. It's going to be in three different phases. Phase one's already started. Phase one's working on when you go from 691 to get onto 91 northbound. It's fixing that ramp to make it two lanes instead of one, so it'll stop backing up onto 691. And that's going to really help with some congestion. When you get onto 91 there, you get on and there's a steep incline, and which causes backup as well, especially for all the trucks. This is a really heavy truck area, so trucks end up slowing down and backing up there. So that will help there. Phase two, which is going to start construction shortly, basically in the next month, that's going to be one of those big problems we see a lot of, where a new ramp, when you're going from 15 northbound and then you're trying to get into 91 northbound, and that always backs up and causes crashes. That's a big component there. And then the final piece will be, you know, when you're coming 91 southbound trying to get onto 15, that's phase three. That's going to start in probably a year and a half or so, because that always backs up too. You're going 91 southbound, then there's this line of cars backed up trying to get onto 15.
It is.
260,000 cars go through this general interchange every day.
Well, that's to count them.
Every day?
Yeah.
Did Justin count them?
Wait, did you hear that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of our busiest interchanges. It is the busiest interchange.
Yeah.
It's the busiest interchange for Connecticut, probably one of the busiest in the country. I mean, outside of the big cities.
Right.
You get your Bostons and Chicago's or whatever. I'm always in awe of the engineers who figure all this stuff out. Before one little shovel of dirt is turned, you figure out, okay, we're going to do this. Then we've got to bring in this material here. Then we're going to pour concrete over here. Then we're going to.
It's amazing.
And we're going to keep traffic
going
the whole time.
Yep.
Pretty amazing.
Yep. I can't button a shirt right.
Now, well, that, you know, that's the hard part is, you know, if we were just building a new road or building a new interchange from scratch, it'd be much easier than trying to do it while we're keeping all the traffic going through here, right? So that's the hard part, and that's what takes time and takes more money, is to keep all the traffic moving through here while we're doing this massive construction project.
That's what I'm thinking, like that Francis Scott Key Bridge
will
be rebuilt a lot quickly than it would have been rebuilt.
Right.
Because there's nothing happening
now. Technology for 77,
They have the maritime traffic. You know, they'll have to take care of along the boats to pass through, but it'll be a lot easier to build that from scratch than it is to try and build a bridge while it's still standing.
It's amazing. It's a small state. You really can't drive anywhere in this state without slowing down for construction.
It's true.
So that's a good thing that, you know, we're working on stuff.
Busy, busy.
Yeah.
We have a lot of money now from the federal infrastructure bill, and the state government has been pumping money into infrastructure, but it causes a lot of frustration for drivers. But just think about how much worse the roads could be if we weren't investing in our infrastructure.
Like that Q Bridge, that's heaven now.
Oh, my God, it's beautiful.
Really.
Yeah. It's lit up and everything's nice.
What a beautiful job everyone did on that one.
Yep, huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful bridge.
What were you doing before you became commissioner?
So I was deputy to former Commissioner Giletti for 3 years.
Oh, great.
And then I worked in federal government for a while, as well as state government, and bounced back and forth between D.C. and Connecticut. But I grew up in Torrington, and my whole family's up there in the northwest corner.
Oh, your first job, McDonald's? No.
My first job was actually at Dunkin' Donuts.
Nice.
All right.
See?
Very close.
See, that's how he serves the public.
Yes.
He learned to love coffee.
He learned to deal with the public
exactly,
early.
Right. And they all drank exactly. coffee and they drove.
Right.
Boom.
All right, Garrett. Well, congratulations on your success, and we're looking forward to meeting you. Garrett Iacolito, DOT Commissioner. An old friend of the show, Martin Teresquintero, on the air. I know I didn't get your name right.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Teresquintero. Teresquintero.
Yeah.
Nice.
Hey!
See that? Wow.
Hey, welcome back.
Thank you.
Explain to us what those divers are going through and how dangerous it is.
Yeah, so this is an interesting situation. The water is not that deep, but it is full of dangers. So an incident like this, it demands a lot of people. And people can stay, I would say, maybe up to 80 to 100 minutes. And that's what they should be able to get out of a regular tank. But you don't want to be alone. The thing is this, that this is in a scenario that is full of unknowns. The visibility is really poor. The water is very cold. Plus, you got all the debris from the structure that fell. And on top of that, you have a massive cargo ship that in any given moment, containers can fall on top of the theater where you're operating.
Oh.
So it definitely is stressful. There is a fatigue. You have the possible delays. Also, I gotta give credit to the person or those who are in charge of coordinating all of these, because you're going to have multiple people from multiple agencies trying to do the same thing. You know, and although for a situation like this, they may be utilizing underwater communication, not everybody's going to be tuned into the same radio frequency. There are going to be limits on the equipment. The batteries on the lights may not work. The sonar may picked up a lot of it. Sonar will work much better in a different scenario because the sonar is going to pick up a lot of the debris that is there, and it may not necessarily be where somebody is. It may be trapped.
Right. So right now they're looking for bodies, and then later they get to cutting up the debris and pulling up.
Most likely what it is now, it turned into a recovery operation rather than a search and rescue.
Yeah.
And the reason is the livelihood of somebody that's still alive, it is very, very, very limited, almost close to zero. So because of that, the decision is made not to put any additional lives at risk. If you know that there's a chance that somebody's alive, then it may be worth giving a crack. But right now, it's not going to happen. So it is right now, it's a different scenario. They're going to collect evidence also to try to reconstruct what exactly happened. And hopefully they can recover the bodies of those victims that have not been found yet. Assuming that they are trapped under or near that field of debris, because we don't know what happened with these guys. You know, they might have been carried away, by the current, whether it was a surface current or a tidal current. You never know. It is very difficult. I know that these construction workers, they were not wearing personal filtration devices or exposure suits because there was no need for them.
That's going to change.
They're working,
there'll be laws now.
Yeah. Well, it could be. You know, there are some, I can tell you in New Haven, for example, when they were working on the Grand Avenue Bridge, those guys always assumed the possibility of falling into the Quinnipiac River. So they had that. But nobody envisioned falling from that bridge all the way to the river.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Martin, have you, how do you know where you are when you're underwater? Like, all right, so you have a meeting.
Whoever's
running the operation says, you're going to take this part of the grid, you're going to take this part.
That is a good question. There's several ways to do it. Well, number one is practice and being aware of where you are. Having a mental calculation of the things that you see around. It could be something as simple as a rock. They are different search patterns. I don't know exactly what pattern they're using. They may be using a multitude of patterns, but for some of these patterns, we will use a fixed line, and then we go on a circle. Most likely it's not going to happen because there are so many obstacles that can entangle that line that it won't work. So it's a matter of setting up points of reference. You may put a stationary line, or you may use an object that uses points of reference. And because the visibility is so poor, that's why you need to have so many people literally almost diving side to side. Because think about these guys. If you are diving in something that looks like pea soup, where you could barely see the gauges and your wrist, you know, so you may have something 2 feet to your left. You're not going to see it. So you need to have somebody that will feel and look. So we use it could be a rock, it could be a piece of jagged metal, and then stick to your pattern, whether it's going to be kind of like a U shape or a rectangular, you know, and then sometimes you make another pass.
Is it murky?
Or multiple passes.
Is it murky because of the crash, or is it just naturally murky in that?
It is naturally murky because of where the river is,
yeah.
You know, because of the tidal. But also every time there is an obstruction, it accumulates sediment. And think about all the boat traffic that goes there. All the propellers from those stir up a lot of mud, you know. So in any given day, I mean, they're lucky to have more than probably several feet of visibility.
If you're diving there, Martin, what would be your biggest concern when you're underwater? Hitting a jagged edge, having your line cut, or losing where you are, getting trapped?
Yeah. So I think that for a situation like this, I will not feel comfortable diving with an umbilical cord. Umbilical cord is something that is connected to your body that will bring hot water to keep your body warm. So it circulates warm water between your wetsuit. So most likely it's not going to happen. It will have telecommunications, electricity for lights, and your air supply. But the risk of that is that your cord can get tangled or anything. So I'll eliminate that, and it will be in a self-contained breathing apparatus. So my biggest concern will be the unknowns. You know, think about this. I know, for example, that they were doing filling potholes. So for all I know, there's probably a truck there full of some material that can eventually dislodge. Fuel containers can rupture, so diesel fuel can start rupturing there. It could be another piece of metal that will fall. I will be very concerned about any sudden movement above that can dislodge a container, you know?
Yeah.
What if there's a container full of who knows what? Stone or you know, marble. I have no idea what the contents of the cargo was, but those are big dangers. Also, the dangers of having too many people there. You know, there's a lot of boats. There are a lot of propellers going around. And if you need to have an emergency ascent for X, Y, and Z reason, there you go. Chemical contamination. We don't know what's on the water.
Have you searched for bodies before?
Yes, I have, unfortunately.
And have you had that problem where there's too many people, too many boats, too many propellers?
Correct. It was a slightly different scenario, but at one point I was in a multi-agency operation, and the biggest concern was that we can communicate among agencies, and it became really chaotic. And it became chaotic because there were helicopters involved, and there was the noise from the helicopter, and then there were also news helicopters in addition to that that created a lot of commotion, a lot of unnecessary noise, and created dangerously. Also, somebody may be setting up a line to execute a search pattern, and it can become a potential entanglement. Likewise, on the wreck diving world, as well as cave diving. What we like to use is a lifeline. So the lifeline, it gets real out, and it's not to pull yourself out of the scenario hand over hand, but you only use that as a guideline. So in the event that everything fails, because a lot of the times instruments will not work because it could be batteries, could be a lot of metal, your compass is not going to be accurate, so visibility is going to be poor, and you may not remember which way you came in. So there is a little nylon rope that you will put arrows on it, indicating arrows. And in my case, I use mine with my initials on it, and I have embedded my initials so I can feel it with my fingers, and I know it's kind of like Braille system, like, yeah, this is the way out. So somebody can mess up with that, not on purpose, but if they modify that, and then you, let's say you're trying to go inside a big chunk of the infrastructure of the bridge to see if there's a body there, and if you set up your lifeline and if that gets dislodged, then, well, guess what? You're not going to find your way out until they put you out with a crane weeks from now.
Yeah. Is it possible a diver, if they don't have their gauges working where they can't see them or both and don't have that lifeline, can lose which direction is up?
If you panic, probably. Your best indication of which way is up is your bubble.
The bubbles, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But, right, just they go up.
But they're not going up. I'll just poop myself.
Yeah,
there's a bubble behind
when I'm scared.
Right. Yeah.
Got
yeah.
it.
Right. But bubbles. If you panic, you know, if you go in circles, you're not going to pay attention to that, you know?
Yeah.
Right, right. Martin, thank you so much for coming on. And, boy, those divers have their work cut out for them.
They do, yeah.
Tough work.
Yeah.
Hope they're safe.
And then we were talking to one guy, 23 years old, from Connecticut, on his way there Monday to start helping to cut the bridge structure up underwater.
Yeah, I hear him. Yeah, well, it's going to be a monumental work, and yeah, it is going to be good for him. It's going to be a lot of work. He's going to be very tedious, and he sounded like, okay, yeah, it's safe. It's safe because you follow all the proper protocols and all of that, but there's always things that can happen. You know, you can snag a line on it. You can cut your exposure suit in a piece of rock or sharp metal object. So the key is make sure that you know what to do in those situations. So that's what, like, proper training is critical.
Diver Martin Torres Quintero, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.